Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report here under lockdown. To those of you who are watching live, we apologize for, you know, the late start, obviously. Personal medical emergency that needed to be dealt with. Nothing to do with the pandemic or anything like that. I don't want to, you know, make people think, but things are looking better, and we're gonna see what happens. But on this belated show, very excited to welcome back to the show once again, Adrienne Lawrence. How's it going?
Hi, it's good. How are you doing?
I'm good. Very excited to have you here. Many of our audience probably already knows, but you're the author of, I went to the wrong one, Staying in the Game, The Playbook for Beating Workplace Sexual Harassment. And Adrienne, I can't really think of a more appropriate show for you to be on for that particular topic.
I agree about that. I'm like, well, hey, we know it goes on every day, but is it blowing up to the extent it is now?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, the weird thing is, like, to think a major media company would be harboring this sort of thing, and that Fox above all places. So
I know, so strange.
Exactly. We'll be talking about that in addition to a number of other things. If you stick around later on, we have an update both on the situation with Portland and some of the efforts by our elected officials to try to push back against this insanity. We also have AOC being accosted by a Republican lawmaker. An update to the Judge Esther Salas story. It's a dark again. Very glad to have Adrienne on to give her commentary on that story. And more as well. But before we get into that, and please like the stream and share it, and you can send in comments and all of that. We're going to start off. Okay. Apologies in advance. Just bear with us. It's difficult. Wow, I didn't expect it to hit me this hard. We want to start off by addressing really tragic news in this community that happened yesterday. You know, independent progressive news lost one of its brightest stars, Michael Brooks, tragically passing away. Very young, younger than me. And I found out about it much the same way many of the people watching this video might. It's you just load Twitter and you get people's reactions to something. And then you have to do like the brief bit of detective work to figure out what exactly it is that happened. And you hope that you're imagining wrong. The first couple of things you see that maybe confirm what you think it is, you hope that this surely some sort of joke, some sort of prank or something like that. I saw a tweet from some of his coworkers at the Majority Report, and I was just shocked. I thought this has got to be an extremely inappropriate prank that is being played, but it was not. He passed away apparently quite suddenly. I've heard different takes on exactly what it was. But regardless of what it was, it's an absolute tragedy. And ever since then, the people who knew him, and many of them who knew him much better than I did, have been giving you know, their reactions to it. And we're going to have some of that. But I just wanted to give my brief take. I didn't know Michael nearly as well as some other people in this community. We only began sort of talking and collaborating together maybe a year or two ago. But I had him on the show several times, and he had me on his, and I just always had a very good impression of him. He was what you like sort of want out of this. It's someone who knows things, who cares about knowing things, understanding the history of what they're talking about and the context of what they're talking about, and not just specifically to the United States. I think it might have been Nando Vila who said he knows more about the politics of Ecuador than any CNN contributor knows about the politics of America. Like, he really did approach this thing like I think we should, like I think a lot of people think that we should, that we have these national boundaries, and they're significant in some ways, legal ways and things like that, but they're not significant in the most important ways. We are a community of people. And he cared about making sure that poor and working class people inside and outside of the United States were no longer crushed under the collective oppressive weight of our government and virtually every other world government that doesn't give a damn about them and never has. And he did it all with a sense of humor. He was able to take very difficult news. And not be crushed by it. And that's difficult, like, for everybody. So, I apologize. One of the things that I wanted to say about him is not just, you know, that he had a very strong impact on some of the people in this industry that I care most about. Like, I know Anna has got to be just devastated. But being in this industry, like, whatever this is, independent, leftist media, the YouTube thing, podcasts, whatever, there's a lot of people who have gotten into this over the years as it's become this bigger thing. And that is great and very important, and I hope that there's far more. But in my experience, there have not been as many people as I would wish that are in it for all of the right reasons. There's people who get it in for, you know, clout chasing and fame and money and whatever. It's the grift that we rail against on the show all the time. And the thing is that I would count Michael high up amongst the small number of people that, whether I'm working with them or not, like, even if theoretically we're in competition with each other, I'm just glad that there are other people out there that actually care, that are doing this not because, like, they don't want to get a job, but because they think that this is the best way that they can make the world a better place. You know, I talk often when I have Emma on that I feel that she's one of those people, the people who there has had opportunities to take the easy road to, you know, crowdfunding and more subscribers and things like that, that looks out there and says, I know what the audience wants me to say, but I'm not going to say it just because of that if I don't believe it. And Michael was that sort of person. He was honest, even when it would hurt his success. And, you know, I'm sure that if you're watching this, you've probably seen any number of the different tributes, one of which is going on live now on the Majority Report. I know, Ben Dixon, who we just had on the show, said that Michael gave him a platform back when he had like 2,000 YouTube subscribers. Like, nobody was paying attention to him. And he was a helpful person. He never, as his show started to blow up, he never, like, cast off the people, you know, that had helped him along the way. He was just genuine and kind and intelligent, just deeply, deeply invested mentally in terms of, you know, wanting to know what is going on and wanting to have a sound intellectual and philosophical and in some ways even spiritual, to hear him say it, framework for how we go forward from here. And so, yeah. It's unimaginable, as so much news in 2020 is. How could that have happened yesterday? Adrian, I apologize. Try to keep it together. It's just, you know, it's difficult because it's not just what he means to me. And again, like I've said many times, there are people that my heart goes out to them because I know that they had much deeper, longstanding relationships with him. It's like, you know, when you say someone's going to be missed. Like, you can mean that the people that knew them will miss them, but then you can also mean their absence will be missed even by people who didn't know.
Yes, yes. And I definitely get that vibe from everything I've read about Michael Brooks, and especially yesterday, just seeing Twitter blow up, and you can really see the impact that he had on so many people. And unfortunately, I did not have the good fortune to get to know him, but my God, from reading everyone's comments and their heartfelt just mourning on social media yesterday, I missed out on an opportunity to know someone who just seems so absolutely incredible.
Yeah, yeah. I want to read just one bit. This is from, I believe this is direct from Sam Cedar, who, you know, worked with Michael longer than basically anyone, had this to say. I've worked with a lot of broadcast hosts and some of the most talented comedians in the country. And what was unique about Michael was not just his intelligence and insight into politics, particularly foreign politics, but his ability to do genuinely brilliant political comedy. I need less than one hand to count how many people I've come across who had Michael's skill in crafting a funny impression or character that was not only a vehicle for political satire, but satirical in its essence. It was an amazing and genuinely unique talent that made coming into work each day for me fun. And yeah, so, you know, feel terrible for everyone, you know, that worked with him at Majority Report and the, you know, expanded network around that. It's a massive loss that nobody could have seen coming. It's like there's so many people out there that are like doing so well that there's nothing in them. Like they make millions of dollars every night on Fox News and they're doing great in this time. And yeah. Anyway, he's going to be missed in all of the senses that we talked about. We're going to talk now about some of the accusations that have been laid out against multiple hosts at Fox News, but I want you to bear in mind as we go forward with this story that this clip contains content that some may find distressing or disturbing, including graphic references to sexual abuse, assault, and violence. We are not going to be reading the entirety of the claims. They're all available, and they're about as dark as anything I've ever read in this area. But what you should understand is that Fox News fired Ed Henry. This is news that we reported on some time ago. One of the network's most prominent anchors and one of the ones that they had said they had pitched as sort of the up-and-coming newsman of Fox after the network investigated a former employee's accusation of sexual misconduct against him. On Monday, just yesterday, the former employee sued Mr. Henry and Fox News, describing a history of workplace harassment and a relationship with the anchor that she said it included violent sex and rape. The woman, Jennifer Eckhart, a former associate producer at Fox Business, said that Mr. Henry had coerced her into a sexual relationship by promising to advance her career. That is one plaintiff. You also have Kathy Aru, a frequent guest on Fox News programs, alleged in the lawsuit that Mr. Henry had harassed her as well by sending sexually explicit messages. She also described exchanges with other Fox News stars, including the anchors Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Howard Kurtz. So some of the biggest names at the network. And she said that she called those inappropriate and sexually charged. So we're going to focus here on Ed Henry. Adrian, I know that you basically have the expertise that few others do in this sort of environment and fighting back against it. As you saw these charges roll out and found out more about what she alleges happened, how did you react?
Well, it's extremely unfortunate and it's very upsetting, but at the same time, it's not shocking at all. You know, it's like Fox News has been sued multiple times for sexual harassment as well as race discrimination. Also, it's kind of, this is also the kind of environment that would cater to sexual harassment, as in it's predominantly white and male, and the way the power structures are set up, women have very few just access to resources, and so they need men as gatekeepers to get through, and these men are exploiting their positions of power.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, Fox News has already had sort of rounds of this happening before, of us learning more. I mean, they've made Oscar-nominated movies based off of the experience there. And so, yeah, the idea that they're fighting back, and Ed Henry is fighting back, saying, I'm going to fight this with every fiber of my being. It's totally consensual and all of that.
I love how they always say it's consensual. And it's funny, too, because a lot of people, at least I had an exchange this weekend on Twitter, where someone had brought up something about a falsified rape allegation, and people always seem to forget that rape allegations are falsified in only 2-3% of cases. So, you know, if we're looking at numbers and statistics, you can probably say, hey, she's telling the truth. And so also we have to consider that Fox News fired Ed Henry, like a month ago in June, because they said they had just investigated some sexual harassment allegations against him. So Ed Henry really has a hill to climb in this situation.
Yeah. And like, if I, like, let's just talk common sense.
Yeah.
If you're this woman and the biggest stars at that network, the biggest stars in the network that is the biggest network for all of right-wing media, propositions you explicitly, graphically, perhaps violently, what happens to you if you don't go along with that? Like, just in terms of common sense. We can't say for sure, but what would you imagine?
Oh, you're going to suffer retaliation. They're going to cut you out of their shows, opportunities. All of a sudden, you're no longer needed and they let you go from the company. Like, this happens everywhere all the time. And it's complete and totally a consequence of turning down and rejecting sexual harassment or standing up for yourself.
Exactly, 100%. It would be so obvious to her, and obvious to him too. And that's why they feel that they can do it without any threat of retaliation. Now, thankfully, we have, thanks to the Me Too movement and affiliated movements, we do have some actual consequences. Not for nearly enough of them, and not nearly consequential enough. But now they're starting to be taught, I hope, that just because you use the threat of effectively ending someone's career to get them to do something, that doesn't mean consent the way that you think it does at all. And you know that. You know that. That's what you're relying on to do this. And that's the thing. She is alleging that the violent rape was perpetuated by Ed Henry, and she's explained the evidence that she has for that and all of that. I'm not going to go into detail into that. She's been very clear about that. And like, she's not, he isn't the only one that abused her. It is an environment where the male talent there feels like the women that are brought in to be commentators or perhaps even co-hosts and things like that, like we know what they see those people as, and
Oh,
it's
they're seen
sickening to
as
see that.
fresh meat. Oh, absolutely. They're fresh meat. They're targeted and they're exploited for the fact that if you reject them in some way or stand up for yourself, you won't not only not work at Fox News, but you probably will never work in this industry in its entirety. So you essentially lose your ability to make an income, your economic independence. So I actually have no concerns with these women waiting the time that they did to come forward because you have to put it all on the line in order to get some semblance of justice. Also, we have to consider that Fox News, being a sexual harassment hotbed that it is, that back in 2017, they had paid out shareholders who sued the company saying, you are wasting our money by keeping these harassholes around and for paying all these backdoor settlements. So Fox News had to shell out $90 million to shareholders to fix that. But the thing we need to pay attention to is the fact that Fox News' insurance company pays that money. Fox News doesn't pay a thing. And all these legal fees, those are covered by insurance. They're also tax deductible to a certain extent. So essentially, Fox News isn't feeling any consequences, nor will they, until their viewers pull out and their advertisers. But their viewers like the propaganda, they like misogyny, they like racism. So this is really par for course for them. It's just a question of do the advertisers like it?
And at least up until the period of time that Bombshell delved into, it wasn't like the management side just tolerated it. The management side participated in it. It was both the on air and off air sides of Fox News that were doing this. And if you are an up and coming woman on the right, a journalist, a legal expert, a commentator on a variety of different topics, what are you supposed to do? Like, in a very real sense, if you don't make it on Fox News, what happens to you? And they're making it, they at least up until recently, very explicitly that is what you will be valued for. And if you make a stink about it, that will probably end your career. I saw the comments after Ed Henry's thing saying he's going to defend himself. There were like many people in lockstep saying that they don't believe anything that she says. Her career could very well actually be done after bringing it up now. And we know there have been other women at Fox News that have filed lawsuits that are still gone. They have not had any media jobs since then.
And Britt McHenry has sued Fox News, and her lawsuit, to my knowledge, is still pending for sexual harassment against her co-host. And it's like Fox News just racks up these sexual harassment lawsuits, and then their insurers end up paying some amount for it. But, this is just a cultural problem in its entirety. And unfortunately, the people who suffer the consequences the most are these women who speak up and the women who also remain silent because their careers are over. Their mental health, yeah, right. Do you think they can enter an office environment and truly be a contributing, productive member without freaking out and feeling triggered? It's like you're just not normal after that. And so these are individuals in our society. These are people, and they are being messed up and wrecked by the beast every day, and no one does a thing about it.
And even like, hopefully, many, this is such a ridiculous, dark world. Hopefully many of the women who are not preyed upon directly in the same way that, these two women and a number of others in the past have made clear, at least in the environment inside of Fox News. But even, but think about what woman gets to be on Fox News without being explicitly sexualized?
Yeah.
Almost none.
Yeah.
Uniformly. Mm-hmm. It's like a joke, I guess, that they've had at Fox News for a long time, but it's not a joke. Maybe some of the women are totally fine with it. I have a feeling many of them probably are not. And in a similar way, would fear, rightfully, and it's that's delved into in Bombshell as well, that if they say anything about that, if they don't conform to this enforced, you need to look this certain way, you need to make yourself visually available in this certain way, you could be entirely done in media. The entire thing is so sick.
Absolutely. And I love it. Visually, you have to make yourself visually available. And at Fox News and these other places, you also have to make yourself physically available.
Yeah.
And it is the most disgusting thing, but it continues to be perpetuated in part because of the silence of this kind of quiet network of we're not going to talk about these things, but also because of the retaliation.
Exactly.
And again, these are productive, contributing members of society who could make, you know, our GDP increase. They can make everything go better if everyone is working and able to do their best, but can't have that, no, because people have to be in power.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, let's transition to another angle on this. In addition to all of what's going on with Ed Henry, another of Fox News's biggest names is facing allegations as well. Michael J. Willimon, an attorney who represents the women along with veteran sexual misconduct litigator Doug Wigdor, told Salon that Fox News had been informed of the second set of allegations from Moreau, her allegations against Carlson on July 9, 4 days before the host announced that he would be taking a pre-planned vacation. Now, he is now back from this vacation. He's done trout fishing. Many people, I think, rightfully assume that that vacation was as a result of us finding out that his head writer was as vicious a racist as you can imagine. But it might be that you had the racism and the allegations of sexual harassment. I don't. What do you think, Adrian?
I definitely think it's probably a combination of the two. I think it's possibly less the racism and more the sexual harassment, in part because we have rape allegations in this one. And the interesting thing is that the two attorneys, Willimon and Wigdor, were my attorneys when I sued ESPN for sexual harassment.
Really?
And yes, so I know them well. And also Wigdor had been the head attorney in suing Fox News those few years ago when he obtained a settlement for, I think, about 20 women there. And so that's just to say Wigdor and co, they know sexual harassment very well, and they also know Fox News very well. So I think Fox is a little bit scared, but you know what? I think that they're probably not necessarily as scared of the lawsuit as they are of a potential another shareholder lawsuit. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, shareholders could end up mandating, hey, you need to clean out your board, you need to do all sorts of things, because the shareholders were not happy last time.
Yeah, exactly. And I wonder, like, having all of this come at the same time, and in particular, this second set of allegations that is against both Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity. So those the two biggest names. Like, Fox seems like they sort of came back from the Bill O'Reilly and Ailes and all of that stuff. They move past it. We let them do that somehow. But I wonder, a second round of that, is it possible that that will be more significant in forcing some sort of major change to their corporate culture and the sorts of voices that they feature front and center? Or is that just wishful thinking?
You know what? Fox had the opportunity because, as these women allege, they knew about these allegations against all of these men back in 2017 when they had to do this full internal investigation. And so everybody knew, and they've known forever, which is always how it works when it comes to workplace sexual harassment. It's just Fox opted not to do anything about it because, you know, seldom do these companies do anything about it until we as members of the public find out about it. And so now Fox is in a position where it's decided to fight, in part because it doesn't really have that many big names left. You know, because since they lost so many already to sexual harassment. So it's going to try to hold on to them for just a little bit longer while it continues to make money off of them. But then also, who knows how long Carlson could end up staying at the network if they don't settle this lawsuit and they end up having to go through depositions, a trial, and whatnot.
Yeah. And I know that obviously we're focusing on the most recent news, which is the sexual harassment allegations, which maybe at some point more specifics will come out. This is the extent of the knowledge I have about it right now. But again, maybe I'm being naive. I don't know, Adrian. But last two Fridays ago, we found out that his head writer had been posting for literally years the most explicitly racist things that one can or should be able to imagine. Wrote the scripts that he read. That's the show. Tucker Carlson doesn't do opining and things like that. He reads carefully constructed scripts designed to advance a particular agenda. Longtime viewers know what that agenda is. But, and so they fired the guy, and he went trout fishing for a few days, and now he's back. And he addressed it for 1 minute and 12 seconds, I think, and said it had nothing to do with the show, didn't affect the show in any way. That seems unacceptable to me, but he's just moving on. What do you think? Is there any chance of, like, he's not going to get fired, right? They would never do that.
Oh, no, God, no. I think a lot of people don't realize how insidious sexism is as compared to racism, because our society will ban you and treat you horribly if you're a racist. You know, it's generally why white people freak out when they're called a racist, as opposed to, you know, hey, maybe I should look at my behavior and see what happens. But, you know, so our society doesn't, it doesn't really handle that very well. But when it comes to sexism, yeah, honestly, it's kind of part of our doing business. And it's okay that it be explicit. And I think that's just very much a difference between racism and sexism. So I think he actually had to go away because of the racism. Yeah. But the sexism, it's like, yeah, this is kind of what we do. And it's also what his followers kind of enjoy.
Exactly. Yeah, maybe. Best case scenario when Laura Ingraham or Tucker Carlson has said something on the edge of too racist even for Fox, some sponsors will leave. And then maybe creep back a couple months ago, or maybe they're gone forever. Fox News doesn't seem to care because it's not like they have Tucker Carlson on just for the ad revenue he brings in. But it's like, how can we have an environment where they wouldn't fire him for having a racist around or for having sexually harassed someone? Because, like, his base if he was to just start using racial slurs on air, a significant portion of his base would love him more as a result of that. They want to treat women in this incredibly misogynistic way. They pine for a time where that was the default, like explicit default, with no challenge, no chance of any justice or anything like that. And so he gets caught. He gives his little apology for a minute. Not even an apology. He literally never said sorry. And in fact, made the racist writer out to be the victim in all of this. And that's the biggest. His show's the biggest in all of political news. His show's the big one. And the standards that he's held to are buried deep below ground.
Oh, absolutely. And also with November coming up, they can't. Yeah, right. You know, Trump would be all over that. They need someone to continue to peddle their, you know, dog whistles and their propaganda. And especially, you know, this anti-woman push, it's been getting a lot heavier and a lot more forceful. And so this is really par for course. If anything, I wouldn't be surprised if Tuck got a pat on the back.
Maybe. Yeah. They're gonna carefully do that behind the scenes, I would imagine. But yeah. Yeah. We have been, I hope, uniformly horrified by some of the footage coming out of Portland of Trump's secret law enforcement military force that's been put together from a number of different agencies, including Border Patrol, and has been sent into Portland to protect monuments, which translates into gas and beat people, and sometimes stuff them into rented vans and drive off and threaten anyone that if you follow them, you'll suffer. And so we've been talking about that, and thankfully, our elected officials are starting to push back. AOC has acknowledged how troubling all this is, saying the United States of America should not have secret police. But in addition, she, as well as D.C. Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, will be introducing legislation this week that would require federal law enforcement officials to clearly identify themselves. It would require on-duty federal agents to display not just the name of their agency, but also the individual agent's last name and identification number. Because up until now, a group of guys in camo can run up, grab someone, and stuff them in a van. You have no name, you have no agency, you have no phone number. Hopefully, you find them eventually. But that's been pretty much it. And that's really not what America is supposed to be like. I would say that getting them to identify themselves is the ground floor of this thing, and hopefully there will be more coming. But Adrian, what do you think?
No, it's kind of mystifying that we live in a society where law enforcement doesn't feel like it needs to identify itself. And so how am I going to distinguish between, you know, someone who's authorized by the state to capture me and a random kidnapper? I don't think this is a huge ask. Unless you're operating undercover, you should not be, you know, kind of operating under the cover of night and snatching people off the street.
Exactly. And we've seen it in Portland. And yesterday we were bombarded by Trump saying, I've got this long list of cities. He mentioned Chicago and a number of other cities that he's planning on doing this exact same thing to. And you had both the acting head of DHS as well as the acting deputy head of DHS all saying, no, we're getting ready to do this. And there was in fact news that 150 of these soldiers, cops, I don't even know what the word is, but it's people in camo that, like Trump, I would assume, are going to be deployed to Chicago. So if you've liked what you've seen in Portland, get ready to see it in Chicago as well. And by the way, all these details are coming from a story on The Nation by Ken Klippenstein, so we're very happy about that. But in addition, he has internal CBP documents that reveal that these federal agents would be operating indefinitely and in undisclosed locations. So I guess it's good that we even know Chicago is one of them. There might be others that we don't know until it happens. He says they'll also have drones on standby to assist as needed. And take a look at this last sentence. The documents describe the DHS's creation of the Protecting American Communities Task Force in response to President Trump's executive order protecting American monuments, memorials, and statues and combating recent criminal activity. So, like, we know the context of that because we're living it every day. But doesn't that feel like the sort of sentence that they would look back decades later and say, oh, that was the start of it? He used this fake thing about statues being torn down, and then all of a sudden, camoed, unidentified men were snatching people off the streets in multiple American cities. Maybe I'm being alarmist, but maybe you should be when they're kidnapping people?
Oh, no. I think this is one of those times to be very, very alarmed, you know, particularly because what we had Trump just a few months ago saying that he's going to use federal law to punish people for defacing any kind of, you know, Confederacy monument when the federal law doesn't protect Confederacy monuments since they're not American monuments. And it's like, so how much are these undetectable kind of law enforcement authorities going to be claiming to enforce laws that don't actually apply, as opposed to actually doing their job, which is why they should not be afraid to identify themselves? There's just a lot of concern here, and it very much feels like we're entering this crazy mad fascist state of chaos. If not, we're in it.
Yeah, and like, what law were they enforcing? Like, you saw the video of the Navy vet with the guy just takes his baton in two hands and starts. The guy was just standing there. And I mean, yes, okay, we've seen a billion videos like that over the past few months, but like, do any of the camoed people think, this is what I signed up for? I am defending the Constitution right now. As we gas this guy who's not even moving. The only thing that makes me feel this is going to be dark. So the possibility is that, no, he's not waiting for re-election. He's getting the new camo shirts active and he's sending them out. And it's everything that we fear it will become. The slightly less dark thing is, and this is what I believe the mayor of Portland had been saying, maybe the governor as well, is this is performative authoritarianism as an election strategy. His campaign, since it can't be about the economy and it can't be about public health because he doesn't care about either of those things, is now going to be, I am going to conjure up the fiction, if not the reality, that there is violence in all of these American cities. And so I have protected you from these people by dispatching soldiers to Chicago and Oakland and things like that. Do you think it's likely that it will end up being an election ploy, or does that not make it better even if it is?
I don't know necessarily. You know, It's one of those things where it's kind of scary just because when people don't want to identify themselves. And I know, Border Protection and ICE, that they recently got approval so that the employees don't have to identify their names and they can keep that out of public disclosure. And that feels very much something we've seen in the past where people can avoid being chastised because they're involved in this, in these heinous acts. And because essentially a lot of it's social pressure, it's condemnation, it's wearing a scarlet letter that keeps people from engaging in terrible behavior with the authority of the state behind their name. But when you take their names out of the equation, they can act with impunity because they have nothing to fear. And
Exactly.
so that's really incredibly scary. And I don't know if he's setting this up so that even if he does lose in November, that he won't be leaving the White House because he's essentially built an army of horrible people.
Exactly. Yeah, and while he's doing it, by the way, his the media arm of his re-election campaign at Fox has been spending the past couple of months painting every one of those protesters that you see being beat in the videos as literal terrorists, using the terminology of they are all terrorists. Those pregnant moms getting gassed, those are terrorists. They're Antifa terrorists and they need to be taken down. And so, a third of the country at least is going to lap this stuff up and they're going to love it. And we don't have the ad, but the most recent campaign ad by Donald Trump is it's an old white woman on her phone in the middle of the night trying to call the police because she's watching TV and there's all this chaos and a masked man is trying to break into her apartment and she calls and there's a voicemail message saying that Joe Biden defunded the police, so if you get murdered or raped, that's what they wanted. It's pretty see-through.
Yeah, for
Even in
real.
comparison to past elections, it's pretty see-through what they're going for there.
Oh my goodness, fear mongering.
100%.
Only the best.
Yeah. There's definitely going to be a caravan in the weeks leading up to the
Seriously.
election. There's going to be a caravan.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, is it better that they normally they try to get you to hate people crossing the southern border or anyone in the Middle East? Is it better that they're like, no, just people in these cities, just
Yep,
American
they're
citizens. You
turning
should hate
us on
them.
one another, and they're going to be more blatant about it. Yeah, with people who are trying to upend the kind of the traditional American norms, it's really sick, and I think it's just going to get even more blatant.
Yeah, I think so. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is frequently accosted online by right-wingers of a variety of types. Online randos, podcasters and things like that, who are both focused on her and hate her. That is all that they are. The Venn diagram is 50% focused on her, 50% absolutely hating her. But now it's come to the halls of Congress because she was accosted today by, sorry, this is yesterday, by a Republican congressman, Representative Ted Yoho, who was coming down the steps on the east side of the Capitol, having just voted when he approached AOC, who was ascending into the building to cast a vote of her own. In a brief but heated exchange, which was overheard by a reporter, Yoho told Ocasio-Cortez she was disgusting for recently suggesting that poverty and unemployment are driving a spike in crime in New York City during the coronavirus pandemic. You are out of your freaking mind, he told her. She shot back, telling Yoho he was being rude, which is really just describing accurately what's going on. The two then parted ways, with Ocasio-Cortez heading into the building while Yoho, joined by Representative Roger Williams, began descending towards the House office buildings. A few steps down, Yoho offered a parting thought to no one in particular, effing bitch, although he said the entire thing. So we're going to have both her reactions as well as our own. Adrian, what do you think about this? Seems pretty brazen for elected officials.
It's like, it's just so sad. Yoho is extremely insecure. They go after AOC because she represents everything that they don't want in their old boys club, a younger woman who is intelligent, educated, articulate, and has passion for the people. So they attack her in various ways. And Yoho doing this, it just shows how much nonsense and tomfoolery he has attached to him. He's 65, she's 30. It's not only grow up, little boy, but also maybe just not be misogynistic and going after a 30-year-old woman because you feel threatened that she has her own ideas. It's gross.
Well, in particular, to call her disgusting, and then when she carries on about her job, to yell after her in that particular way. Like, you, I understand people are complex, but sometimes you get a little window into who they are. If you didn't already know Ted Yoho and all of his history and everything, like, you just, you know who he is based on that interaction. And you also get to find out who Representative Roger Williams is based on that, because here is where it gets perhaps even more pathetic. Now, she said, "That kind of confrontation hasn't ever happened to me, ever. I've never had that kind of abrupt, disgusting kind of disrespect leveled at me. In all these intense news cycles, I've never, ever been treated that way by another member before. I'm frankly quite taken aback." So, understandable. Yoho just says no comment. Probably a good call. He's made enough comments as it is. But Representative Roger Williams, who was in a position to hear the entire back and forth, in fact, walked off with Yoho afterward, said he wasn't paying any mind. Quote, "I was actually thinking as I was walking down the stairs, I was thinking about some issues I've got in my district that need to get done. I don't know what their topic was. There's always a topic, isn't there?" So he was standing right there, but he doesn't know anything.
No,
he didn't hear nothing.
Of course not. And I love it because that's like the one of the core aspects of misogyny, like sexual harassment, like really crummy cultures and how they treat women, is that other dudes are not going to stand up or condemn you, even if they know it's wrong. They're just going to act like it didn't happen or just keep moving. And that's exactly what this guy does here. It's just so lowly and absolutely pathetic across the board. Mm-hmm. Just stop being so insecure. It's gross. Again.
And pathetic to pretend that you didn't hear it just because you can't bear to call out Yoho for what he said and what a reporter heard. Like, you already know the reporter was right there. It's going to come out. Just don't be so pathetic. But she points it out. AOC tweeted, "Gotta love Republican courage from Representative Roger Williams. When he undeniably sees another man engaged in virulent harassment of a young woman, just pretend you never saw it in the most cartoonish manner possible and keep pushing. He's lying, by the way. He joined in with Yoho. What's wild to me is why you would blatantly lie to a reporter who saw this exchange. You were yelling at me too," she said, "about, quote, throwing urine." Now, you're probably wondering what that means. I don't know. But he apparently was part of it and now is pretending that I was just thinking about constituent concerns and things like that. But we also have, afterward, Ruben Gallego said, "I have suggested the same thing that AOC had, that poverty and unemployment lead to crime. Weird that neither Yoho or any other members ever talked to me that way." Representative Dean Phillips also said, "Like AOC, I believe poverty to be a root cause of crime. Wonder why Representative Yoho hasn't accosted me on the Capitol steps with the same sentiment. Hashtag shameful." And it is.
Yep. Exactly.
And of course we know.
Yeah. Oh, we totally know what the score is. It's like, it's just one of those unfortunate aspects of being a woman. And hey, you know, it's not going to change, especially if people just sit there and act like they didn't hear it when we damn sure know that they did join in, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's for Yoho, it's like he on a fundamental level despises and looks down on women and doesn't respect them. So you have that. That's why he would feel like, I can do this to her. I would never do it to a male representative. But he also is so stupid, so ignorant of who she is and what she is, that he doesn't get that, man, you should have just gone for Dean Phillips or Ruben Gallego, because she's the last one that you want to do this to, you moron. She's not just going, what do you think, she's going to quiet down? She's going to stop speaking out? No, she's going to lash out at you with the social media fury of a tornado of daggers. Like, and he looks like a joke coming out of this because he's a stupid, ignorant misogynist who doesn't understand the world that we live in.
Exactly. And also, it's like not the best time for Florida right now, as their leadership isn't really doing the best thing. So it's like, way to be Florida, man, yo. You're really winning on this one. Yeah. And especially, since New York is looking pretty strong.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you know, you're 100% right. Like, from the very beginning, Matt Gaetz, you know, he was like joking around with his gas mask. And Texas, which is being incredibly hard hit, you got Ted Cruz is like trying to pick little petty social media fights with people, like he doesn't get that his state is on fire. None of them do. They don't feel any responsibility to the people that regrettably voted them into office.
Yep. And I really, really hope that they are no longer in office, because we can't have leadership like this. Like, you just, all of this loss that's going on, America doesn't have time for misogyny and racism because we are all going to go under if this ship is sinking. Yeah. And these people who are supposed to be at the helm, they don't seem to get that. They want us to stroke their ego and for them to act up like this when, hey, it's not good for any of us.
Yeah. I want to give you an update on a story we talked about yesterday on the show, and that is the absolute tragic targeting of the family of a judge, Esther Salas, whose son was murdered, her husband in critical condition following a person who had clothed himself in a fake FedEx uniform, went to her house, and then opened fire. An absolute tragedy that we know a little bit more about today. Federal authorities said, following yesterday's broadcast, that Den Hollander is suspected of shooting the husband and son of U.S. District Judge Esther Salas at her North Brunswick, New Jersey home. Two law enforcement sources told CNN that the suspect died of what is believed to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound. And since then, we have found out quite a bit more about this individual. He had argued one case before Salas, a lawsuit where he represented a woman and her daughter as they sought to register for the military's selective service. In the case, Den Hollander's client claimed the draft was unconstitutional because it barred women from registering. And this is an area that he was intensely interested in, with his website describing himself as an anti-feminist lawyer who defended, quote, men's rights. He had unsuccessfully filed lawsuits against bars and nightclubs offering ladies' nights, claiming they violate the 14th Amendment. And he filed suits against the federal government challenging the constitutionality of its Violence Against Women Act, the, quote, Female Fraud Act, as he called it, and against Columbia University for having a women's studies program. I don't know how much further we want to go into his particular writing, but they are expansive and as dark as you would imagine based on that introduction.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. Again, it's a matter of misogyny killing. This person has all sorts of just hateful beliefs for women. And this thought that it's a zero-sum game, men have to be advanced, and women should be robbed of any sense of equality or any societal status at all. And he took this out and took the life of this judge's 20-year-old son, I think, who was a rising junior maybe at Catholic University, mm-hmm. and also her husband now being in critical condition. And this is what happens when misogyny goes unchecked. And it is brutal.
Yeah. I feel so bad knowing that being a judge on this level, you've got to be afraid. Yeah. But we're supposed to be a country where judges get to live without that fear. That's what we're supposed to have. And unfortunately, we don't. We have individuals like this who find, you know, willing radical communities online where, like Tucker Carlson's writer. It wasn't just him posting some blog that no one ever read. No, he goes online to find other people like this. And they just prod each other into ever more radical, hateful views towards a group. It might be racial groups on the case of the writer, although he was a vicious misogynist as well. And in this particular case, this guy who made it his entire life's work to fight back against women. And in his writing, has, you know, sort of threatening things, talking about solutions to political commies and feminists. That's about as dark language as you can imagine, considering historical you know, context. He says things begin to change when individual men start taking out those specific persons responsible for destroying their lives before committing suicide. I don't know how long ago he wrote that, but that appears to be what he did. I mean, who knows what's going to happen as we find out more about this story, but These people are out there. And
exactly. And they're not just country bumpkins or ignorant people at all. This man was a lawyer, and he worked at Cravath, which is one of the biggest, very, very prominent and prestigious law firms in the world. Yeah. He was a smart man. Like, he was an educated man. He also had very, very hateful beliefs and views. These people are among us. They're brothers, sisters, fathers. They walk among us.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. And I mean, how many mass shootings did we see over the past few years of people who have identified as being parts of this community and feeling like, so for like, let's say this community, let's say 99% will never do anything violent, but they're all sort of waiting and trying to push each other to be the one that will. And now it's targeting judges. And, you know, I know that we might find out more over time. It's described as him being a Trump supporter. I haven't seen anything in his writing that, aside from, you know, their agreement on certain communities, about that being any sort of direct, you know, impetus for him doing this. But he did have a, you know, a case pending against her. Just devastating. And I can't imagine, like, just pray that, you know, her husband comes out of this, but no matter what, she's lost her son because some madman who had a national platform, he'd been on many different shows. He was on Stephen Colbert's show years and years ago. And all the while, this is who he was.
Yep. And that's the thing is, it's like this stuff goes on in front of our face all the time with when we interact with people. We just want to downgrade it and say, oh, it's no big deal. Maybe that person was joking. Oh, they're a little off. When no, these people are allowed to navigate our society and no one speaks up. Just as we saw Yoho go off on AOC and try to tear her down in a misogynistic fashion and his brethren sit there and join in and then say, I didn't see anything.
Yeah.
Those same things play out on a daily basis. You just don't know who's going to just stop at words tearing you down or maybe push you out of a job in some way, and who's going to get a gun and try to kill you and your family members. But the reality is, all of it is because it's going unchecked.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's for judges, but it's for reporters as well. Like, how many female reporters have been accosted doing live hits and things like that?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, we need to fight back. Adrian, thank you so much for joining us. Obviously, a different sort of show today. But I appreciate you bringing your expertise and your perspective. Really do always appreciate that and look forward to having you back on the show in the very near future.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Have a good one. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.